Lemurian Viewpoint is a series of articles written from a Lemurian perspective for those sincerely interested in understanding life's true purpose. It consists of 4 volumes and was published and copyrighted in 2006 by the Lemurian Fellowship. Volume 1, Chapter 1, Our Prayers, Who Hears, Who Answers. With each tick of the clock or pat of a falling raindrop, somewhere a prayer for help is spoken. The wide world over, endless petitions are addressed to God, to the Creator, to Allah, to Christ, to the great unknown. No matter how limited we may be, or how advanced, no matter how selfish our desires, or how enlightened the asking, people share the universal impulse to pray. In the hour of extremity, we pray. In a moment of gratitude, we pray. But who hears these prayers? Who answers? Is it the omnipotent Creator we call God? This is what most believe. Whether we consider the Creator of this universe as an all-pervading intelligence and power for good, or simply a great celestial being, does it make sense that the desires, needs, and prayers of an entire human race would be attended to by God alone? Or would the omniscient Creator have a far more efficient support system in place? There is comfort in the belief that our prayers go directly to God, and that for a moment the Creator's entire attention is centered on our prayer. This idea is so appealing that we are reluctant to think further to consider if it is practical. Of course, results are what most people are interested in when they pray, and just how these results are brought about is not a major concern. But throughout the world, there are those who reach out for a clearer, more understandable explanation of why prayer works as it does, and want to understand who actually hears and answers. Understanding how prayer works and who is listening requires that we also consider life beyond our physical world. Often we feel uncertainty and awe about the realms beyond the physical, as well as the mystery of its inhabitants and their work. But this can be dispelled if we sincerely seek the truth. There is a wholesome and rational connection between the seen and unseen in life, and in that connection lies reassurance of the unity of all life as it merges into a composite whole. In the Lemurian philosophy, students are encouraged to approach subjects that may be new to them with an open mind, and to give themselves time to consider the logic of what they may be learning. In the process, all that is sacred remains. No comfort or beauty in what one may believe is lost, but rather it is enhanced with a new dimension of God's plan for mankind. All of us are aware of tremendous differences among the 6 billion people who currently populate the earth. A few live in small family groups in primitive Stone Age conditions, surviving by hunting and gathering without a written language, clothing, or any of the technology we take for granted. At the other end of the spectrum, it seems, are those who live in highly organized societies with the latest scientific advances to make their lives as physically comfortable and interesting as possible. But what about others we sometimes hear about, such as the Masters, who have advanced even beyond the most modern existence we can imagine? The Lemurian philosophy reveals information about the Great Brotherhoods, also referred to as mystery schools. These great schools are made up of men and women who have progressed so far beyond the ordinary walk of human life as to have solved all human problems. They are able to perform feats that, to us, seem miraculous. Among them are many of those called saints, though not all saints have yet achieved the degree of perfection essential to mastership. At this time in history, saint is a title conferred by humans with qualifications much less exacting than our Christ. And it is Christ who determines who has reached this degree of human advancement. Under Christ's guidance, these schools work in close cooperation to guide humanity toward at-one-ment with God. Each school concentrates on a segment of the Earth's population. These segments are not based on geographical separations, but rather groupings of individuals determined by mental characteristics and tendencies. Differences that include, but are not limited to, cultural background, and religion. Even among those who share a particular religion, there may be egos responding to different schools. For instance, there are many people in the Western world who are predominantly Eastern in their thinking, just as there are those in the Eastern world whose basic thinking is Western in character. Each school has under its jurisdiction those individuals whose type of mentality responds best to its particular teaching. Also, each school uses whatever methods prove helpful in imparting information and truth that an individual can convert into knowledge and wisdom through experience. The help extended to humanity through these great schools in no way interferes with the individual's God-given power of self-determination or right to choose. The great ones who help us in our journey along the path of unfoldment adhere strictly to God's universal laws which govern all life. They can be considered as God's helpers, closely attuned to our very human struggles. Just as these wise and understanding teachers inspire, guide, and influence us in the direction God wishes us to go, so do they hear the prayers of men, women, and children as we reach out towards that source of power from which we know or sense comes the help, comfort, and fulfillment we seek. From the standpoint of human advancement, we know that those we refer to as masters have achieved all there is to accomplish as human egos. They have successfully solved all human problems, having experienced human life in its entirety. In a word, they have mastered the lessons of life which still remain ahead for most of us. Somewhat less advanced on the spiral of evolution are those known as adepts and initiates. They too are identified with one or another of the great schools and consciously work to assist humankind. In a very literal sense, these masters, adepts, and initiates have become closely attuned to the various groups of individuals which fall within the jurisdiction of the responsible school. As advanced egos, they are fully aware of the needs as well as the problems and struggles of humanity, and their dedication is to the entire human race. Whether or not we believe this to be true, each person on earth receives the compassionate love, aid, and understanding of these great ones. Some people think of them as angels, but help from angels and archangels is needed only in the most complex situations. Ceaselessly and tirelessly do these great ones work to help us recognize our purpose in life, guiding, inspiring, and encouraging us to do all that is essential to fulfill our God-given potentialities. They do this so that we may enjoy the sweetness of life and reap the rich rewards of one day conquering all human problems. Also attuned to the inhabitants of Earth are countless other egos who function upon the planes beyond the physical. In fact, our prayers are heard by vast numbers who inhabit these unseen realms of life and activity. Just how this occurs and what takes place thereafter is a fascinating phase of God's great plan for our well-being. Essentially, prayer is a mental activity, and as such, its primary effect registers on what is known as the mental plane. The advanced egos who function on this unseen plane, as well as those who have conscious access to it, are able to hear, receive might be a more accurate term, any mental activity originating with those of us on Earth. It could be said that they possess the finely developed ability to converse mentally and know the true thoughts of others. As you might imagine, those who are capable of mentally tuning into and understanding the prayers of so many people would be overwhelmed if they received all such thought transmissions with equal volume and clarity. But it does not work that way. An illustration may help. Imagine you are seated in a movie theater with 200 or 300 other people. Before the movie begins, the overall babble of voices is constantly in the background, but you are aware of the sound only as you pay attention to it. The people on either side are in direct communication with you. You hear them, and they hear you, almost to the exclusion of all others. If someone calls your name, your attention would immediately be focused on that individual. Also, if you focus your attention on someone a short distance away, you can actually tune in or listen to his or her conversation while the people close to you are momentarily tuned out. This is a physical form of attunement, selective attunement, and it corresponds to what takes place on the mental plane. Most of us have known or heard of a parent who sensed harm or possible danger in the life of a child, even one who may have been miles away at the time. This is an example of selective attunement that is a bit closer to what the great ones can do. Some have termed this intuitive awareness mental telepathy, but actually, it is a form of mental attunement. The same thing, but to a much higher degree, occurs between us and those advanced egos who are in close contact with the mental plane. All of the great schools combine their efforts in helping people to realize their cosmic purpose in life, to raise their consciousness, to overcome weaknesses and gain balance, so that eventually they may take their place beside those who have achieved the goal of mastership. For thousands of years, people have been directing their prayers to whatever sources of power they look to for aid and comfort. Whether we pray to an unknown God or to powers of good, whether it be to the God of love, the Father of mercy, the Masters, or simply to the wise and understanding helpers who are above and beyond us, doesn't really matter. Those who watch over us hear our call because they are attuned to us. And once we know the source of our help, we can address ourselves to that source with the understanding that it's only logical to seek aid from those who are nearest and best prepared to give it. Our prayers for greater knowledge, peace, prosperity, health, happiness, security, forgiveness, and our many personal fears and wishes are all heard and carefully considered by those who are attuned to us and who are vitally concerned with our well-being. Yet, not all prayers are answered in the way we may believe they should be. Actually, the answers to our prayers come in whatever way will prove to be for our greatest good and the greatest good of all concerned. It could not be otherwise. Suppose, for example, we pray for good health and it doesn't manifest. What if, in spite of our prayers and doing all we should to deserve better health, it still does not come true? What is the reason? Why doesn't our health improve if our prayers are being received and presumably answered? Our desire to bring about what we want or think would be helpful may not always be advisable. In the eyes of God and those who know better than we do, there may be more to consider in knowing what is for our greater good. Sometimes a health problem that persists does so for a positive purpose. For example, the condition might provide an opportunity to learn an important and valuable lesson about life or make a new start, a needed change. You've undoubtedly observed this in the life of someone you know. Consider the people with certain heart ailments or other diseases who have to use a lot of self-discipline in diet, exercise, rest, and stress relief. Circumstances force them to live moderately, and certainly the value of moderation in maintaining health is a lesson many of us could afford to learn. On the other hand, a serious continuing health problem might also offer a chance to help others with similar problems. For example, consider the life of the late American actor Christopher Reeve, who was paralyzed in a horseback riding accident. As much good as he may have been accomplishing in his life before his injury, the attention he brought to new approaches and insights into spinal cord injuries might not have been realized had he quickly and completely regained his physical abilities. Or what about the example of Candace Leitner, who started the program Mothers Against Drunk Driving after losing her child in a fatal drunk driving accident? At the time, we don't know why we go through such heartbreaking experiences. Yet the good that arose from these two seeming tragedies and the programs that have grown from them are benefiting the lives of millions. Admittedly, it is more difficult to use the same logic and reason in our own affairs. But when a prayer does not seem to be answered in the way that it is hoped for, how might you think of the good that may also be occurring? We can't always perceive the wisdom behind the ways in which some of our most fervent prayers work out. But sometimes, when we look back, we can piece together an answer that we couldn't see at the time. Once we know just how these things are handled and by whom, once we feel assured that our own and our loved ones' well-being is not only God's concern, but the deep concern of the great ones who assist all men and women in the course of their ongoing, it becomes somewhat easier to have faith in the outcome of our prayers, and with faith comes a sense of peace in the knowledge that only such events and conditions as may be for our ultimate good can and do occur in our lives.